Morning. It's good to be back with you after being gone a couple of weeks. I appreciate the men who filled in for me while I was absent. Had a good trip, and very thankful that I was able to do that, and appreciate those who helped me out here to be able to do that. I want to talk this morning about the subject of storms. Just about every night of the week, you can tune into the Weather Channel and watch a program called Storm Stories. And true to the title, they investigate the weather events and their impact on people. And certainly in our area, you know, we're not too unfamiliar with that. In fact, you know, when I arrived in Japan, I learned that there had been an earthquake the day before we got there because, you know, people were texting us asking if we had felt it, but it happened before we got there. And it was not very significant, but it does happen quite a lot there. But we don't see too much of that in our area, but we certainly do see tornadoes. A friend of mine that lives in Texas, just a couple of weeks ago, there were several storms out there, and they certainly had some issues. He had a tornado that went within two blocks of his house, and he said that there were people that were finding fish in their front yard that the tornado was dropping, dropping catfish in people's front yards. And more seriously, there was a tornado that came to Van, Texas, that took lives, and also in Wimberley, Texas, there was a family in a house that was washed away, washed down the river. And the home, while it was going down the river, struck a bridge and it came apart. And several of the people that were in that home died. So, you know, there's things that happen like that. And we understand, being in Alabama, how those things occur. And how powerless we feel when something like that happens. We live in an age of satellites and iPhones that we could scout and report weather and be forewarned, that lives are still in jeopardy when these kind of things happen. But what happens when you see these kind of events, it draws people more closely together. And these kind of things really draw people closer together and hopefully closer to God, because as we just sang, our God, He is alive. He is all-powerful. And He is the one that sustains us. And throughout the years, you know, Christians sometimes gather together to weather storms of every kind. It may be a storm that's happening in your family. It may be an illness. It may be a death in the family, or it may be some other kind of problem. Or it may be that, you know, sometimes people are drawn together by the actual storms, the weather. And so what we need to remember is, no matter what happens, that God is always here and that He's always stronger than any storm. And so we want to talk about that this morning. The way we're going to do that is look at a few examples, one that's already been mentioned in our Bible reading this morning, the book of Jonah. And there's certainly a storm in the life of Jonah that we can see. The book of Jonah is a very short book. And it is a interesting book because it is a book that instead of being a book of prophecy from a prophet, it is a book about a prophet. And most of the prophets, the books of the prophets, are words of the prophets. But you really don't see a whole lot of words from Jonah, because it's more of a narrative of the book of Jonah. So here in the book of Jonah, we see that Jonah was asked to do something he didn't want to do. Nineveh was a city, an Assyrian city, that was very evil, and it was a terror to the Jews at times. And saving Nineveh was not something that Jonah wanted to do. He would have wanted to do the opposite. So what did he do? Well, he ran from God. He fled from what God wanted him to do. And sometimes when I read this account, it reminds me of being on a trip with my dad, because I understand now how trying a trip can be with four children. And we had a station wagon that had a front seat, a middle seat, and what we called the very back seat.
And so if my dad had the ability to keep driving and to swat us at the same time. You know, he could reach into the back seat and hit us, but if we got to the very back, he couldn't reach us back there. So, you know, we thought if we want to act up, we're going to go into the very back, but we forgot that he could pull over the car and he could pull us right out of that seat. So when I think about Jonah running from God, he ran from God for a little bit, but it was of no use, just like me going into the very back seat. It was of no use because my dad was going to get me anyway. And Jonah, he fled from the duty that God had given him to do, but running from God doesn't ever work out. And so God caused a great storm to come upon the sea. You look in verse 7 of chapter 1, it says, "And they said to one another, come, let us cast lots, that we may know on whose account this evil has come upon us. So they cast lots, and the lot fell upon Jonah." And as was read this morning, you know, Jonah was the cause of this great storm that was on the sea, because Jonah had tried to get on the boat and go as far away from Nineveh. He actually went into opposite direction from Nineveh. Verse 8 says, "Then they said to him, tell us on whose account this evil has come upon us. What is your occupation? Where do you come from? What is your country, and of what people are you?" And he said to them, "I am a Hebrew, and I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land." And so Jonah acknowledges God, but he's not acknowledging God. He knows who God is, and he rightly tells these people who God is, but hiding in a boat was not truly acknowledging the living God. So God here is making His presence known to Jonah, and as a side note to these other men as well. But Jonah certainly recognizes God's presence here as we read on. Verse 12, it says, "He said to them, pick me up and hurl me into the sea, then the sea will quiet down for you, for I know it is because of me that this great tempest has come upon you." Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to get back to dry land, but they could not, for the sea grew more and more tempestuous against them. Therefore they called out to the Lord, "O Lord, do not let us perish for this man's life, and do not lay on us innocent blood. For you, O Lord, have done as it pleased you." So they picked up Jonah, hurled him into the sea, and the sea ceased from its raging. Then the men feared the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. So Jonah recognizes God's presence. He saves the people by sacrificing himself, and they humble themselves in worship to God. Verse 17 says, "The Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights." So God sent this storm to show His presence. And when Jonah was against God, you know, God was still there. And when Jonah decided to walk with God, God was there. So the point is God is always there, whether or not Jonah wanted to acknowledge that or not. And of course, this book does end in a very sad way, as we see that Jonah did go into Nineveh and preach to the people of Nineveh, and they acknowledged God, and Jonah pouted about it because that's not what he had wanted to occur. So the point here is that Jonah could not run away from God. If we look at Matthew chapter 12, we see Jonah being referenced by Jesus. Matthew chapter 12, verse 38, "Some of the scribes and Pharisees answered him, saying, Teacher, we wish to see a sign from you. But he answered them, An evil and adulterous generation seeks for a sign, but no sign will be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For just as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. The men of Nineveh will rise up at the judgment with this generation and condemn it, for they repented of the preaching of Jonah, and behold, something greater than Jonah is here." Now, there is a lot that is said here by Jesus. The main thing that Jesus is saying here is that God was with Jonah, and God is also with His Son, doing even greater things, which is going to be Jesus being raised from the dead. Interesting to note that a lot of people look at the account of Jonah as being a fairy tale or a fable, but Jesus references that as something that actually happened. He suggests that that happened to Jonah. He was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights, so will the Son of Man be in the earth 3 days. And so Jesus talked about this as it is real and it really happened, which it did. But God was with Jonah, God was with Jesus, and God is always working to His glory. And so when we see storms, we need to realize, as we sang this morning, that God is alive. God is with us always. And God may do things sometimes like He did with Jonah to humble us, but we need to acknowledge Him in all areas of our life. Another passage that we see a storm is the disciples' test that we see in Mark chapter 4. Mark chapter 4, starting in verse 33. With many such parables, He spoke the word to them as they were able to hear it. He did not speak to them without a parable, but privately to His own disciples He explained everything. On that day, when evening had come, He said to them, "Let us go across to the other side." Leaving the crowd, they took Him with them in the boat, just as He was. And other boats were with Him, and a great windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking into the boat, so that the boat was already filling. But He was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke Him and said to Him, "Teacher, do You not care that we are perishing?" And He awoke and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. He said to them, "Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?" And they were filled with great fear and said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey Him?" You know, we're not told specifically in this account that this storm was sent by God, just as the storm in Jonah was sent by God, but it seems to indicate that this is early in Jesus' ministry. The disciples had seen Him do many things and they had believed, but you know, their faith was still struggling. Their faith, you could say, was young. And I don't want to judge them too harshly. I've never been on the sea and had a storm rise up. I imagine that would be kind of unnerving to be in that situation. And I've known of people that have perished in situations that seem to be much less, you know, hazardous than this. So, you know, let's think about this, that these men were thinking that they are facing potential death. And this causes fear in them. But even in a time like this where people are so afraid, Jesus says, "Peace be still." And the waters obeyed Him. And what's interesting is the text says that they were even more afraid after that because they saw the power that He had. They realized the true majesty of the One that they were with. So, you know, they were afraid of one thing and then they were afraid of another. So what's the application to us? What is it that causes us to be afraid? You know, it can be, you know, something similar. It could be a hurricane testing somebody's courage. It could be those kind of storms that come through this area that are literal storms. Or it may be storms of life that bring trials and tribulation and temptation. And these are all moments that we can show that we revere God more than we fear the external things that are around us, regardless of what it is. And we don't want to be fair weather Christians. And too many times, that's the way people are. They are okay serving God as long as everything is going okay. But when there's the slightest upset, the slightest thing that goes wrong, you know, the song that we sing relating to this passage, "Master, the Tempest is Raging," I love that song because the chorus is, "Peace, be still." And that song builds and it builds and then it gets quiet, it says, "Peace, be still." So even when the tempest is raging, you know, our faith can be strong, and it should be strong, because the strength that God has for us is greater than everything that's against us. Romans chapter 8, verse 35, Paul echoes the same kind of sentiment when he talks about our strength that we have in Jesus Christ. Romans chapter 8, verse 35. He says, "Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? As it is written, for your sake we are being killed all the day long. We are regarded as sheep to be slaughtered." And you know what Paul is saying here is just not speculation. Now, Paul is enduring these kind of things. He continues to endure these types of situations throughout his ministry. He's just not talking about something in theory. You know, he is going through persecution where people are seeking his life. Tribulation, distress, persecution, famine, nakedness, danger, or sword. Those are things that are fighting against him. But Paul says that's not going to separate him from the love of Christ. He says in verse 37, "No, in all these things we are more than conquerors through Him who loved us. For I am sure that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor rulers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus our Lord." You know, it means a lot to me when I read Paul saying that, knowing the things that he was going through, that he was able to keep that attitude of faith. And no matter what the storm was in his life, that he was able to know that nothing was going to separate him from the love of Christ. Another person that needed to remember that is the disciple Peter in Matthew chapter 14. Matthew chapter 14, starting in verse 22. What we see here is that time had passed from this first storm that we saw the disciples endured, and the disciples have strengthened in their faith. They have just seen Jesus feed the 5,000. And that's where we pick up in Matthew chapter 14, verse 22. "Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone, but the boat by this time was a long way from the land, beaten by the waves, for the wind was against them. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, 'It is a ghost.' And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, 'Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid.' And Peter answered him, 'Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water.' And he said, 'Come.' So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, 'Lord, save me.' Immediately Jesus reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, 'O you of little faith, why did you doubt?' And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, 'Truly, you are the Son of God.'" So, even in the storm, with the winds and the waves, Jesus is walking across the water. And even as that was happening, as the storm raged on, Peter asked to step out of the boat and walk on the water. So you see that Peter seems to have some measure of faith here. But Peter is focusing on Jesus. And focusing on Jesus would give him great courage to do that. But after he starts walking on the water, he begins to notice other things. He notices other things other than Jesus. He notices the wind. And he notices the waves. And those things were there all along. It's not like, well, he started walking and those things just started happening. They were there from the beginning all along. But his focus is wavering. And it's clouding his mind. And so his faith wavers. And what happens? He sinks. And fear got him. And he begged to be saved. And Jesus takes Peter by the hand and says, "O you of little faith, why did you doubt?" Now, faith is something that is an incredible thing because, you know, with it, you can do things, and without it, you can't. And Christ expects us to have it. And He expected Peter to have it regardless of the situation. And Peter needed to remember that. We sang the song, "Just So Sweet to Trust in Jesus." And that's what Peter needed to do. And just like Jonah went into the water and was swallowed by the fish, Peter was going down when he didn't have faith. In 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 12 through 14, Peter gives advice to those who are undergoing persecution. And 1 and 2 Peter are very interesting in that they are books that are talking to people who are undergoing persecution. Peter doesn't have good news for them. He tells them, you're undergoing persecution, and I'm afraid to tell you that you're going to undergo more. But Peter now has a reference point to talk about some things. He says in verse 12 of 1 Peter 4, Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you as though something strange were happening to you. But rejoice in so far as you share Christ's sufferings, that you may also rejoice and be glad when His glory is revealed. If you are insulted for the name of Christ, you are blessed, because the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. So Peter tells these people that times of true testing are going to come. It's not going to be wind and waves, but it's going to be a fiery ordeal of suffering, and there is going to be all kinds of doubters that are going to oppress you. But he says, in all of that, you shouldn't be surprised. And the storm that was around Peter when he started walking on the water is not something that should have surprised Peter. It was there when he got out of the boat. And the challenges and persecutions that we face, the challenges and persecutions that these that Peter are addressing, they shouldn't surprise us. Jesus' hand came upon Peter to lift him up. And God will lift us up too. But we have to keep our eyes focused on Jesus and not pay attention to the things that are around us. And that was what Peter's problem was here, is that he didn't stay focused. He started paying attention to all the things that were on either side of him. And if we're not laser focused on God and Christ, and we start focusing on the world, we start focusing on problems, just as we talked about this morning in our Bible class, and we hinted at things that are coming to pass for the Israelites when they sent in the spies to spy out the land. Instead of focusing on what it is that God had done for them and focusing on the promises that God had made for them, they started focusing on other people. They started focusing on those that were in the land that they considered to be giants. And they lost their faith, because they were not keyed in to the right thing and to the promises of God. So we need to have the kind of faith that Jesus inspires Peter to have, and the kind of faith that Peter inspires those that he is writing to have as they come in contact with things that could possibly shake their faith. Another storm that we see is in the case of Paul in Acts chapter 27. Acts chapter 27, starting in verse 18. Paul here was a prisoner. He was being escorted to Rome, and he found himself on a ship in a very terrible condition. 276 people were on board, and things were going downhill fast. Verse 18, Acts 27, since we were violently storm-tossed, they began the next day to jettison the cargo. On the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. When neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest lay on us, all hope of our being saved was at last abandoned. You can tell, by the way this is written, how dire this situation was. They couldn't see the moon, the sun, or the stars, so they didn't have any way of navigating. And they started throwing things overboard to lighten the load, but it was not helping. Verse 21 says, since they had been without food for a long time, Paul stood up among them and said, men, you should have listened to me and not set sail from Crete and incurred this injury and loss. Yet now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For this very night there stood before me an angel of God to whom I belong and whom I worship. And he said, do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar, and behold, God has granted you all those who sail with you. So take heart, men, for I have faith in God that it will be exactly as I have been told, but we must run aground on some island.
So this angel from God came to Paul and made him a promise that you're going to live, and in fact, all those that are with you are going to live. And it took 2 weeks, and there would be a shipwreck at the end. But, you know, God's promise prevailed, of course. And Paul's message to the people is that in the face of fear, you need to be courageous. But did they all share that attitude? Look at verse 30 of the same chapter. Acts chapter 27, verse 30. As the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship and had lowered the ship's boat into the sea under the pretense of laying out anchors from the bow, Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, "Unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved." Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the ship's boat and let it go. So you see what they're trying to do. Some of them are not listening to Paul. They say, "Well, we got to man the lifeboat." And Paul said, "If you do that, I'm not promising that you're going to live. God has said those that are going to be on this ship are going to live. And if you're going to try to escape and be fearful, then you're not. You're not going to live." So some had lost their strength. They wanted to flee. Paul gives them the simple message that you can only live if you stay on this boat. You have got to ride this out. You have to believe that God is at the helm, and hope is the anchor that will keep us where God wants us to be. And so this is a great message to end this lesson, to get in and stay on the boat. If you do, God has promised for you and all with you. If you leave, then you're on your own. And you think about, you know, the storms of life and the physical storms that pass through our area very much. You know, there's storm damage and there's trials that people face. And there's loss of life. And there's uncertainty. But you know, those things are temporary. How long will trouble last? How many times spiritually are people tempted just to give up because of the storms of their life? I don't know how many times that happens to people. How many times will we be tempted to give up on God? What we can say is, like Paul said, on this boat there is life. And God is our captain. Hope is our anchor. And we're not going to bail. It takes patience. It takes faith. But hope will prevail through Jesus. That's what Hebrews chapter 6 tells us. Hebrews chapter 6, verse 13. "For when God made a promise to Abraham, since no one greater by whom to swear, he swore by himself, saying, 'Surely I will bless you and multiply you.' And thus Abraham, having patiently waited, obtained the promise. For people swear by something greater than themselves, and all their disputes and oath is final for confirmation. So when God desired to show more convincingly to the heirs of the promise the unchangeable character of His purpose, He guaranteed it with an oath, so that by two unchangeable things, in which it is impossible for God to lie, we who have fled for refuge might have strong encouragement to hold fast to the hope set before us. We have this as a sure and steadfast anchor of the soul, a hope that enters into the inner place behind the curtain, where Jesus has gone as a forerunner on our behalf, having become our high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek." Again, this tells us that hope will prevail because God keeps His promises, and we can have our hope through Jesus Christ. But we have to remember that hope is only found in Him, on this boat as His people. And if we're not among the people of God in obedience, then we've already really lowered the rope and gone some other direction. And we need to get with the people of God by becoming a child of God through baptism and through obedience to the gospel of Christ. Hope these things will be an encouragement to you as you face whatever storms of life that you have. And remember to stay on that boat. Song of invitation this morning will be, "We Have an Anchor That Keeps the Soul." Let's always stay on board. and not Baal's, but remember that God will take us where it is that we want to be, and that's with Him in heaven for eternity, if we'll be obedient to Him. If you're subject to the invitation this morning, in any way, and we can help you, we'd invite you to come while we stand together and sing.